And welcome back to another episode of Masked Monologues. I'm so excited that you are joining us here today and tuning into this episode. If you like this podcast, I just want to remind you to leave a review. So leaving a review helps us because it gives us feedback, and I'd love it if you could tell us if you like the podcast. If you don't, feel free to leave that review. And if you do like this podcast and you want to support us, then please share it with a friend or a family member. I will let you proceed with the episode. Hello, and welcome back to another episode of Masked Monologues. Today, I'm joined by Jerem. He is here with us today, and he is going to tell us a little bit about what he does. Would you mind introducing yourself?
Yeah, not at all. Jerem Rogers. I'm actually based out in Phoenix, Arizona, and I own and operate a real estate team here, about almost 100 agents. And
it's fun.
It is fun. It's a lot of work. It's a lot of personalities, but I absolutely love it.
Can you tell us a little bit more about what your day-to-day job includes? Because you manage about 100 real estate agents, and you just mentioned that's a lot of personalities to deal with. So obviously, you seem to be in more of a management position. You overlook a lot of individuals. Can you tell us about how you approach that, if there's any techniques you use to deal with people, or basically what your job encompasses?
Yeah, that's a great question. So my job is, I'm the COO, and so I oversee a lot of basically the day-to-day operations of our real estate team. I have incredible staff that does a great job at what they're specifically assigned to do. And I manage multiple, we call them pod leaders. Pod leaders is basically like the manager over a specific or a certain group of real estate agent. But it's, I don't know if I'm the best. Some people love me and some people hate me that work with me. I'm more of a rule follower. I'm not the one to have fun. I'm like the mom. If you don't get your way from me, you're going to go to dad and see if dad will say yes. I like to use the example of Michael Jordan and Dennis Rodman. Dennis Rodman was a very hard person to manage. And I feel like our agents are like, we have some Michael Jordans and we have some Dennis Rodmans. And there's no way that the Bulls would have been able to win six champion Dennis Rodman. So even though he was hard to manage, he was a crucial part of their team. And I think it just comes with experience on how to manage specific personalities. And I don't know if I can give anyone sound advice, except try and figure out what makes them. If you're trying to manage them one way and one way only, that won't work. You have to be able to massage the way that you manage specific people and specific personalities. It's not a one size fits all.
Yes. And you say that you have an approach which reinforces rules, or you're very by the book, where everything has to be this way and everything in your mind, I'm assuming, has to run smoothly and just be more, I'd say, concrete, as where it's more specific, more detailed. It's what you're supposed to do. Can you tell me how you approach a situation that's maybe a little bit out of the norm, unexpected, not what you're used to? How would you go into that? And depending on the people involved, because I'm not too familiar with what goes on internally, the real estate agents, or what situations you've had to deal with and how you've approached them, because I'm not familiar with this industry or how that works. So if you could explain, in the past, what situations have you had? What have you seen during your time as a CEO? And what have you, just elaborate on that?
Yeah, absolutely. So I would definitely say that I am by the book, and most people that work with me would agree. And I don't know as if it's, I love having that personality trait, but I've worked in business organizations where there's been a lot of nepotism. And in my opinion, nepotism is just a huge cancer. And so the only way that I see basically getting rid of nepotism is by having certain specific rules. And if you hit certain rules or milestones, then affords you other opportunities. So in our industry, we are a huge online lead team. So we're a premier agent with Zillow here in Phoenix. And we're one of the teams here in Phoenix that get Zillow. Zillow is a billion-dollar company. They're massive. Everyone knows who they are nationwide, worldwide. And they've decided to partner with us here in Phoenix to represent their consumer. So our agents, what happens is Zillow will ring and our agents will pick it up. And then they'll go and create a relationship with that person and sell that person a home at the end of the day. And so a lot of our agents, they want to take 30, 40, 50 Zillow leads a month or however many they can. But a lot of the times when people call in on the phone, they're not ready right then to go and purchase a home. They're just in the initial stages of browsing, doing their due diligence, figuring out what they want. But our agents, sometimes they don't continue with the follow-up. They want to just answer as many calls as they can and then let somebody else follow up with that client. But that just doesn't work. You can't scale that type of business model. And so when we pause agent from getting lead, they sometimes get upset because they want more leads, but they didn't do what they were supposed to do to allow themselves to get more leads by following up with those leads that they've already gotten. And there's a fine balance between managing these agents because these agents are also 1099. They're not W-2 employees where they're getting a paycheck every 2 weeks. And so that's another tricky part in our industry or my industry is being able to manage them and motivate them to hit their goals and what they want to achieve. Because it's not like I can just fire them. They make their own income. And so
also can't give them a house to sell. They have to be independent and work for themselves. So I see where you're coming from there.
Yep, exactly. So it's a tough line to balance.
And you were saying how most people who call up, they're in that looking stage where they're not sure if they want to buy a house, but they're somewhat interested in it. And to me, I'm just thinking of a marketing funnel, and this sort of seems to be the awareness stage where you've learned about the company, you know what they do, and you're familiar with them, but you need something to tip you over the edge and find out more. So I want to know how you'd tell your real estate agents to take these clients or prospective clients and have them actually visiting houses, maybe putting in offers, and how do you take it from that top part of the funnel? I'm just using a funnel because first example that comes off my head, and bring them down to the purchasing stage.
Yeah, really good question. You have to be able to create value. And we've had hundreds of agents come and go on our team. And a lot of the ones that go and they don't stay are the ones who all they care about is making money. All they care about is the transaction. They don't care about the relationship and they don't care about the value that they're providing. And so I'm trying to change the mindset to focus on the value first, and then the money will always come. And so when it comes to that sales funnel, someone on Zillow will initially call in inquiring about a home. And at the end of the day, they ultimately want to purchase the home. But if you can't create value and help them understand why buying a home in a certain neighborhood or city or certain type of home isn't beneficial to them, then that's not motivating for them to purchase a home or to upgrade from the existing home that they're already in. They called in on Zillow or whatever it might be, a Google lead on a Google pay-per-click ad, talking about top of funnel. You have to be able to create value to get them down to the bottom of that funnel. And that's what we do. We do a pretty good job of that here. And that's why Zillow partners with us. They know that we do a good job. We are actually the number one team with Zillow here in Phoenix. And I like to consider Phoenix as the NFL of real estate for the country. Phoenix is absolutely brutal when it comes to competition, and we are the best of the best when it comes to Zillow numbers, and that's something that we're really proud of.
Okay, so now I just want to go back to how you said you were talking about top of the funnel and then bringing clients down, and you said to the bottom, to the buying stage, said how some of that had to do with transforming your real estate mindset into not be hyper-focused on the transaction, the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow, as I put it, and be focused more on the relationship with the client. that has to do with changing the entire culture of the company, I'd say, the environment of the real estate agents or mental mind frame. And as someone who overlooks all these operations, I'm wondering how you reinforce that or how you connect with real estate agents and say, hey, you know what? It's not all about how many calls you pick up each day, because if you're picking up 100 calls and you're only getting 3 clients, then that's a pretty low conversion rate because you're not doing the follow-up. And so how do you instill this mindset into your real estate agents and advise them to focus on that relationship, adding value, and just being there for the client, I'd say?
Yeah. So it all starts from the top. And so when I was heavy into transactions a couple of years ago, that's how I built my business and was off of the relationship and off of creating the value. And I had a crazy amount of success in a very short time as a real estate agent here in Phoenix because of the way that I ran and operated my business. And when we would hire on agents who would have a different mindset operating their business, we would just compare. And any other agent that came in who wanted, because every agent comes in wanting to sell 80 to 100 homes a year. That's what they want. But not all of them are willing to put in the effort to get there. And so when agents come in to our team to interview, they say, hey, this is what I want. I want to sell 50 homes a year. And we'll say, hey, X so-and-so agent, he sells 40 or 50 or 60 homes a year. And this is how he operates his business. And it's based off of value first. Where so-and-so, he sells 20 homes a year. And his business is based off of, I just want a paycheck. I don't want a relationship. I don't want to talk to these clients after they close. I'm just looking to do transaction work and that's it. And we basically just compare those two agents, this potential new agent coming in, and ask them, what do you want? If you want 20 deals a year, then run your business like so-and-so. If you want 60 deals a year, run your business like so. And so it every single time when you have value as the core principle of your business, you will close 2 to 3 times more than you will if you don't.
Yes. And you're speaking about this specifically as it pertains to real estate agents in the real estate industry. But I have to say that I've seen this across all industries where, you know, that seller, that agent, whoever you're talking to, who's just pushy and wants you to buy, is buy. And I'd say that's not the best tactic because it deters people sometimes. You go into a store and it's, do you want this? Do you want this? Or you go shopping at a mall and it's like somebody shoved something in your face and you're like, I didn't need that. I was just browsing or I was just looking around. So I want to know, how can you change your approach, even meeting with a client, because you're talking on the phone, then maybe you go to their house, you meet with them, or you have a meeting area because you're selling houses as well, you're purchasing houses. So how do you go and show up for that person and act genuine and authentic as you want to help them? And I know that's difficult to replicate, especially if you're somebody who just wants that paycheck. It's not going to come off as you want to help the client. So how can you be there for the client during those interactions?
Yeah. So we call it commission breath. When you walk into a listing appointment or when you're meeting a buyer at a home for a buyer consult to tour some properties, you can almost immediately smell it or just feel it. They're there for one thing and one thing only.
It's so potent.
Yep. And that's a paycheck. And so as soon as you can basically meet them and tell them, hey, I'm here, I'm on your timeline. Whether you buy in a week or in 10 years, like, that's okay with me. You'll never feel pressured from me ever. I'm just here to provide value and help negotiate a hell of a deal for you, whatever it might be, if you're selling or buying. So whatever questions you have, let me know. I'm the professional. I've been doing this all day, every day for over 15 years. Let me help you. And if I can help you and provide value, then compensate me for it. If I can't, then don't. And so coming off an approach like that versus, oh yeah, this is the house you need to buy because it's a 3-bed, 2-bath with a pool. The one down the street just sold for $50,000 more. This, you got to buy this today, it's going to be gone. Like, that tactic just doesn't fit well with most consumers. And that's more than just the real estate realm, like you had mentioned. That's like just in general. Like me as a consumer, I want to use someone that I know is the best of the best in their profession. And that's all that I need to know. If they can help me and I know they're the best of the best, they can provide that value, I will end up using that person for whatever industry it is that they're in because I trust them. And so I've noticed that trust level runs deep, very yes. deep in the real estate realm. And this, it's a sad statistic, but only like 17% of buyers and stuff use their same agent again that they used to help them buy or sell their home previously. So like less than 20% will ever use you again as a realtor. And it's because I think the most of us have commission breath and they just don't want to feel pressured or don't want to do business with us anymore. And that's sad. And so my business, yeah, exact opposite. I feel like 75% of my clients, if not more than that now, end up using me again. So I would say that my business is an anomaly. And I also sell a lot more than the average agent here in Phoenix. And it all comes back to value that I was able to provide them. And I was on their timeline. If I needed to poke them in the right direction, I would poke them. But I would let them know, hey, I'm poking you. This is why you've told me what you want. And you're getting cold feet. If you don't want to buy, that's totally fine. I'm not here to make you buy a home. But you had mentioned that you wanted to get out of the apartment that you were in because there's mold and you have a 2-year-old daughter who gets sick. Like, I'm trying to get them back to thinking of why they wanted to buy in the first place. And lots of times there is like a tipping point where people get freaked out or worried about should they do it or should they not do it. And so as a third party, kind of knowing the story and having a different perspective, I can help motivate them into the right direction. But that's the opposite of forcing someone to buy a home. If I know it's the right home for them, I will tell them, hey, I feel this is the right home for you because X, Y, Z. If you don't want to buy it, that's totally fine. And if you want to keep looking, that's totally fine. But here's the reasons why I feel this would be the best option for you.
Yes, and it's so funny how you say that you're on the client's timeline because I've spoken to other business owners and one example was just of this woman. She had a mailing list going, and on the mailing list, I think it was going for around 3 years. There was this client, which she had for, I think, a year and a half on the mailing list who hadn't purchased. And then it wasn't until a year and a half later, after reading the emails, that she purchased from her. So I think a lot of times, a lot of people in sales think more short term, where it's just, how can I get the money now? How can I get it now? And as you're saying, it could be now, but it could also be in 10 years. It could be in 5 years. It could be in a year. It could be in 2 years. And if you make a good first impression, you show up for that client, they're going to remember you, right? So yeah. You always remember that one person who went over their way. They went out of their way to be kind to you and courteous. Yes. Yeah. No, I love what you're saying there. I want to know now, as a manager, what would you say is the most difficult part of your job? Because you're dealing with these real estate agents, and I don't know what you do as in day to day. Do you usually check up on them? Do you have one-on-one calls? How does your job work?
Yeah. So we basically go off of metrics, and we have daily, weekly, monthly, quarterly, yearly metrics that I have for myself, that our chief marketing officer has, that our CFO has, that our individual agents have, pod leaders have. We all have metrics that we have to hit. And some of those metrics, one of the biggest metrics is how many leads have you received and how has your follow-up. So we have a CRM that basically is super robust that can tell us anything and everything that the agents are doing in regards to nurturing their client that we've given them, because these are mainly team given leads that we're giving to them to nurture and work. And so my day to day is basically making sure that those metrics are hit. And if those metrics aren't hit, then it's a phone call or a conversation. Hey, James Brown, I'm noticing that we're falling short on our metrics for 3 weeks now. Is everything okay? And lots of times it's either laziness or they've got something going on in their personal life. And so I'm there just trying to help, motivate, coach, figure out what I can do on my end to make it easier for them to continue that follow-up. Because as you mentioned earlier, the email, this game is all about follow-up. And if you're in this game, pick up the phone to sell a house tomorrow, you won't win. You'll never win. No one ever wins that game in this industry. The only winners in this industry are the ones that can follow up. And we have a massive quote on our wall that says, fortune is in the follow-up. And it's true. That's what this business is. But follow-up takes effort. Follow-up takes time. It takes energy. It takes work. And if you're not willing to put in that energy and work and effort, your business is going to struggle. And so that's a lot of times what I'm doing on day-to-day is that. Figuring out who's struggling to convert, whose metrics are suffering, and see how I can help. And if I can't help, then that's totally okay. They can go to a different team or different brokerage. We are the best of the best here, and we expect and demand the best of the best. And if you're not willing to play in a sandbox of the best and you want to have a subpar business, there's a thousand other brokerages that'll take you. But we're trying to separate ourselves from the norm. And we don't want to be the team that's known as like the used car salesman of realtors, like most realtors are. That's just a bad reputation of one associated with our business.
Yes. And as you mentioned earlier, you can't necessarily fire people because they work for themselves. That's different from a lot of other business models out there, because most of the time you can say, fire them if you have to or if you must. But as you were saying, you'd recommend them to another. How would you try and help someone improve? But is there a point where you can't do the work for them? You can't get Mike to get up and do his calls or do his leads. You can't get him to follow up. So what do you do in that situation? And what are the steps that you take? Maybe it's first giving him a call, then checking up with him in a couple of days or maybe in a week. And how do you give someone the resources and the encouragement to prosper and to get as many leads as possible and sell as many houses?
I first have to figure out what it is they want. Because if they're a good person that fits our core values and matches our culture, if they're okay selling 8 or 10 homes a year, then that's okay with me. We're not looking for only people who are willing or wanting to sell 100 homes a year. We're absolutely okay with an agent who wants to sell 5 to 10 homes a year, as long as their core values fit our values. And so we'll take 1,000 agents that are only wanting to sell 5 or 10 homes a year. And so it really just comes down to figuring out what it is that they want, what their goals are, and if our team can help them hit their goals, which for the most part, I would say our team is more than capable of helping any agent with whatever goals that they want, small or big. And so once I can figure out what it is that they want, then I got to figure out, okay, what is it that you're willing to dedicate to get or to hit that goal? And lots of times it's single mom who have 4 kids at home and they want to sell 40 homes a year. That's tough. And that's where we have to sit down and figure out, okay, how can we make this happen for you? How can we help you leverage your time, your business, your other obligations, your priorities to help you hit the goal? And once we can figure that part out as well, we let it run for about 60 days and we reassess. And if they're hitting all of the mile markers, then we just continue to help coach and push them along to hitting their goal. But sometimes 2 weeks go by and they're not hitting any of their metrics. They're not keeping me in the loop of what's going on. They're clearly just dropping the ball because they're either lazy or they're just tired or they don't want to. And those people, we realize that we're just not a good fit. And so we'll usually encourage them to go to a different brokerage to help them with whatever they're trying to accomplish. But there's nothing more exhausting than giving all of your time, energy, and effort to helping an agent and then them just not do it. It's like a slap in the face. And that's one of the hardest parts about my job is just those slaps, because I get them more often than I wish. But every now and then you get that person who just does anything and everything that you say. And it's cool to see their business just take off. And not just their business, but their lives change. Real estate is, it's like America. It's endless opportunities. There's no ceiling. You can become whoever you want to become. Do whatever you want to do. Real estate is an incredible career for someone who has the discipline, self-discipline, to to stick to their goals and their daily routine. And so it's cool to see those people who do stick to that routine, and you can see their lives change. And that's very rewarding.
Yeah, that must be intrinsically rewarding. Now I want to ask, you speak about levering your time, and I think this would be beneficial for my entire audience, just because there's so many business owners, so many artists, so many creatives, and everyone's thinking about how they can be more efficient, how can they do more in less time, and what they need to focus on when it comes to their business, when it comes to their creative pursuits, whatever they're doing. So can you discuss some strategies that you have found have worked to leverage your time? And I know you'd be approaching this as a real estate agent, and that's completely fine. But if you notice anything that you've done in the past that has worked well for you.
Yeah. So yeah, this can apply to pretty much any industry as far as leverage goes. But there are 100 things that I have to do in a day. There's 100 things that any sort of profession, artist, whatever it might be, people demand your time. And if you don't protect your time, people will steal it from you. And so you have to figure out what it is that is the highest dollar per hour generating job that you can do. Now, I get, 300 emails a day. And of the 300 emails, there might be 30 or 40 that are really important that I need to touch. The other 260, 270 can be answered and managed by somebody else who has a pretty good idea of who I am and how my business operates. And it doesn't take you very long to teach somebody that. And so I have somebody who manages my email, which saves me a lot of time. I forward my phone calls from 9 in the morning to noon to my secretary, my executive assistant, who answers all of my phone calls, she's basically the gatekeeper and will trash any spam call and will take messages from anyone that I need to get back to. And so she does a really good job at gatekeeping my time in that sense, because from 9 to noon is when I make my dial. That's when I'm trying to proactively generate new business. I'm calling people who have inquired about homes for sale. I'm following up with people who called 6 months ago about looking at a home and they haven't bought. How can I help? Are you still on the market? 9 to noon is the golden hour. And that's when I generate most of my business. And that's $2,000 an hour work from 9 to noon, whereas answering emails is like $8 an hour. And so I've leveraged myself in that sense with my emails, with my phone calls. And what I've really done is I've broken down what it is that I do in a day and just figure out what it is the most important thing that I can do. And whatever's not, I have to leverage out and I have to get help. Now, a lot of my help are Philippines. A lot of people that work with me work in the Philippines, and they're $4 an hour and they're incredible. I know some people are against that, and some people say to hire local, which I would absolutely hire local, but the people that I have that work for me are incredible, and it would be really hard to find someone as them that I could even come close to paying that amount of money that I pay them. And so figuring out what it is that's important or that generates the most income, you have to figure out what those are and do those. And whatever's not, you have to be able to let go of the vine and be okay that they make a mistake here and there. If they're responding to an email and it wasn't the exact way that you would have written it, like, that's okay. And you have to be okay leveraging yourself and letting go. And I'm a type A personality, so I like perfection. But if you want to leverage yourself and be more productive and more successful, you have to be okay being like a B-plus personality instead of an A-plus personality, or else you'll just never be able to leverage yourself ever. That's my experience anyways.
Yes, and it's so difficult how that is to let go of looking back of how other people do things and thinking, I would have done this differently. I would have done this. I would have changed this. But sometimes you just have to say good enough is good enough in some cases. I also want to talk about how you say being bombarded by emails. And I think everyone gets like this entire rush of emails in the morning when they first wake up. And that prevents them from doing anything else with their day, where you wake up and you pick up your phone, you start reading the emails, and then before you know it, an hour has gone by. And you're like, but this is not the most productive work I could be doing with my time. It's not the most, I don't get the highest ROI on this work. So it's, I love how you restructure your day because you know that your clients are going to be most available from 9 o'clock to 12 o'clock. And then do the, as you were saying, $2,000 an hour activities at that time. I also wanted to speak on how you say outsourcing. So I do a lot of outsourcing as well, but I use Fiverr, which is like a outsourcing platform. So I understand how sometimes getting people from other countries, they can do it cheaper and they do a better job, I found. If I were to tell someone that I knew to do this work, they might not know how to do it. And then you have to train them. You've got to tell them how to do their job. But if you go and you find somebody in a different country who also does this for a living all the time, you're just going to get a higher quality product. So I love how, you know, definitely use that outsourcing there whenever you'd like to and whenever works best for you. I want to thank you so much for speaking on this podcast. I believe that a lot of what you said will be invaluable to my audience. And I want to ask if you could shout out to your website or social media platforms. If people want to connect with you, what's the best place to reach you?
Yeah, you can find me on Instagram. My it's Jerem Rogers. Pretty simple, although my first name's weird. Jarom Rogers, Rogers. And from there, you can pretty much find me anywhere else. My website's on there. My Facebook, my LinkedIn. Once you find my Instagram, you can pretty much find me anywhere.
Okay, thank you so much. And please do connect with Jerem. If you like this podcast and you want more episodes like this, then please leave a review and share with a friend or family member. Thank you for listening.